It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here. Good to see my friend, Captain Mike Ward.
How you doing this morning?
I'm good. We're here pushing the end of August, which, by the way, and we'll talk about on some shows in the future, some pretty good gators killed during gator season.
There was.
Some pretty good ones out there, so we'll get into that discussion, maybe get Chris Nix back on with us to talk more about that. Also, we're going to talk more and more management here as it's if it ever stops raining. Okay, a lot of people in the woods getting ready. Yeah, we can talk about the laments there. Even if you want to do some work, I know the last couple of weeks we talked about some things you should be doing management wise right now. But you're getting ready for deer season. It's kind of tough right now.
That's right. And snapper season still going.
Yeah,
looks like it's going to go through to the end
of December. Yeah, end of the year. That's a chance to get out there and get after it. We're not even close to the tonnage on snapper. Hopefully, I'll get out tomorrow. Conditions look good and get out there and do that. So we'll talk more about that coming up in just a little bit. And listen to this pivot here. You know me well enough that I'm looking forward to September. I think September 10th is actually, I check my phone calendar, start of blue-winged teal season in the state of Alabama.
You duck hunt?
A little bit, once in a while.
So
there's our transition into getting a conversation going with the Alabama native and now chairman of the board of Ducks Unlimited, Doug Schoenrock, is joining us now. Thanks for being on.
Hey, thanks a lot. I really appreciate the opportunity.
And let's talk about Ducks Unlimited. This is, even to go away from the outdoors for a second and just talk about brands, right? Because the rest of my life I'm in brands and marketing. That's a heck of a brand, Doug, to be the chairman of.
You know, it's a tremendous honor and yet a huge responsibility. You know, we're one of the most recognized brands in the outdoor space in the world. And, with that comes a lot of responsibility to do the right thing for the habitat and for all of our members.
Now, so you ascended from being the president to the chairman. What's the difference in the job? Like for people that are uneducated like me, like what changes for you?
You know, that's a great question. You know, when you're the president of Ducks Unlimited, you preside over about 55,000 volunteers who put on about 4,500 events a year. So you go all over the place to state conventions and meet with volunteers and participate in events, and you try to raise money for habitat conservation. So you're a road warrior. For 2 years, you spend a lot of time on the road, and you're out there meeting donors and major donors and everybody that's kind of a kindred spirit in this wonderful world of waterfowling. And then after 2 years, you transition to the chairman of the board. And chairman of the board is a little different responsibility because you preside over a 65-member board. And you deal with a lot more governance issues and a lot more policy issues that can affect wetlands and wetland conservation, in the future. And so you're more focused on a healthy organization that you leave in your wake so that future generations can enjoy the same thing we like to do. And that's maybe getting out in September and enjoying a little teal hunt.
I can't wait to talk about that more with you and get in the policy questions, which I have a lot of. But you mentioned being the road warrior. So as somebody that many decades ago, as a younger man, was volunteer for Ducks Unlimited and would watch the banquets, the folks that came in had the same spirit. They came in from Ducks Unlimited National would have the same spirit as we do, but they actually would know how to organize the event. You know, it was like the herding cats cliche. We're full of spit and vinegar there and wanted to help and do stuff, but it was that kind of person who come in from National and said, okay, let's do this, but here's how you do it, here's how you make it successful. I mean, that goes a long way, but that takes a special training.
It does, and thank goodness we have there's about 550 to 600 staff people, and they're scattered throughout the country, and a big percentage of them are in the fundraising business. And so what they do, like regional directors or directors of development who are staff, work with volunteers such as myself and area chairman and district chairman and state chairman to teach them how to put on successful fundraising events. And so they have to motivate these volunteers to get their friends involved and to hold community events and get underwriting and sell tickets. And you're right, it's a lot like herding cats. And I've done it before, and it's a thankless job, but in the end, you realize that the money you raise goes to a great cause and puts habitat on the ground.
Yeah, that connection between, you know, being chairman like you are and thinking from that link the whole way down to Anywhereville, USA, and their local, you know, DU banquet. I mean, that's it's quite a chain. It's quite a lot of moving parts on that.
But I'm sure you were that way growing to the president, too. You were involved, I'm sure, and did all that stuff before you ever became president, right?
You know, I was. I grew up in a little town called Fayetteville, Tennessee, which is just north of Huntsville, Alabama. And I organized some events there and then helped with the Huntsville chapter and then got fortunate enough to serve on the board of directors and in various positions. And honestly, I think that they ran out of things for me to do, and that's why they made me president a couple of years ago.
but the idea of, you said, you have, 620,000 members. This is like, that's running like one of the biggest companies in the country. You know, that many people involved and possibilities, that's quite a scale of management. I mean, beyond just it's ducks and it's cool and it's wetlands, but it's just a management challenge.
It's a huge business, and thank goodness, you know, I'm a volunteer, and my career was with some big companies, and it was fortunate that I learned a lot about P&L management and brand management. And, you know, we have over 1 million supporters, and I think in the fiscal year that just wound up at the end of June of this year, we wound up with 680,000 members. And, you know, the one staff person that reports to a volunteer, and that's the CEO of Ducks Unlimited, reports to the president of Ducks Unlimited. And during my presidency, I'm the COVID guy, you know.
Yeah, so you got the COVID years.
It was hard to do. And, you know, my goal was to just keep the thing from going in the ditch, you know. And by doing so, we focused on nose-down P&L management. And we actually, I'm very proud and honored to say that we had our best two financial years during the COVID 2 years in our 85-year history.
Doug, that's something. I mean, if you just had just kept it afloat, I think it would have been a success. You know, I mean, because we've talked about that a lot for so many, whether it's in the wildlife world or whatever charities that we deal with, that the need for the charities was still there, but the mechanism, that banquet mechanism, whether it be for your, you know, local kids charity or something as big as Ducks Unlimited, those events weren't happening.
You're right. We canceled 2,200 events in the beginning of the year 2020. And we pivoted quickly to virtual events, and I never thought I'd use the word pivoted and quickly in a sense where I use Ducks Unlimited, you know. But we did. We moved to virtual events, and our volunteers grabbed a hold of them, and our staff taught us how to do them, and we virtually replaced all the income we thought we were going to miss by going to virtual. And a lot of our peer organizations didn't do that, and they're still suffering today because of that.
It's true. I mean, it's true. And you know, that even though people didn't go to an event, or maybe, you know, those others that didn't do the virtual, the demands of those charities, like Ducks Unlimited, were still there. I mean, the ducks don't care that it's COVID. Wetland Preservation doesn't care that it's a COVID year. I mean, it just keeps on the demands there.
The ducks have been doing what they've been doing for millions of years, and they don't care about what man does except please put more habitat on the ground. They pay no attention to boundaries. They pay no attention to pandemics. And so we felt it incumbent on us to continue delivering on their behalf.
Let's talk about that and the kind of the policy ideas and the moves, and we can talk about specific things and more recent. But overall, the idea behind Ducks Unlimited and habitat preservation, what is, like, if you had to, cliche here, the elevator conversation. Doug, at DU, what do y'all do?
Well, what we do is we are a science-based waterfowl wetland conservation organization, and that impacts about 700 other species as well. So what we do is we try to put easements or acquire property that is of historical waterfowl value and return it to its natural waterfowl state via perpetual easement, and then open those areas up where possible to public hunting to embrace the waterfowler, who is our largest constituent. And what we do is we basically are in the easement or the land purchasing business, and we try to protect in perpetuity what the good Lord wants us to do with that land. And that's the way, that's what we believe. And, you know, since DU is conserved about 17 million acres in the United States since 1985, which is when we started doing work in the United States. But since inception, since 1937, we've influenced and conserved over 1 billion acres.
Wow,
in
man.
Canada, United States, and Mexico.
It's a testament.
That can have a significant impact.
You did 17 million acres in conservation easement? Is that what you're saying?
17 million acres combined in easements and acquisitions in the since 1985.
Think about that.
That's a lot.
And we've done about 20,000 acres in the state of Alabama. And I think we've raised, last year Alabama was about $1 million state, and I think ACDNR, who is a tremendous partner of ours in the state of Alabama, has contributed a couple $1 million to Canada, where most of our ducks come from, you know. So just in Alabama, we hosted over 50 events last year.
Coming right back, more of our conversation, and we'll get into more of the meat of Ducks Unlimited. Talking to Chairman of the Board from Ducks Unlimited, one of ours, Alabama native, Doug Schoenrock, our guest right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And remember, online, you can always grab the podcast through our website or our app. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward, and our guest, Alabama native, Huntsville native, Doug Schoenrock, Chairman of the Board with Ducks Unlimited. A conversation talking about, first of all, just the mechanics of running something that huge, like Ducks Unlimited. But the other part of it is the policies out there. Right, because there's fundraising, and like you said, being in the land acquisition and easements, which I think easements, just in my opinion, I'll find out from you, the actual expert, have a bigger, you can have more effect on waterfowl, more places with an easement than actually physically having to buy that tract of land, right?
That's correct. You know, with easements, you can maintain private land ownership. So someone can put their, you know, their marsh or their swamp into a permanent easement. And, you know, we help that landowner with the oversight of that easement to make sure it remains in compliance. And we put a protective covenant on it that protects it in perpetuity for generations to come.
And it's, I mean, there's, like you talk about the acreage out there, there's places that are producing ducks and wintering ducks right now that are only there because they had that protection. They're to become something else.
100%. You know, most of our ducks come from the prairie pothole area of the United States, where the Dakotas, Montana, northern Nebraska, into the prairies of southern Saskatchewan and Alberta. And most of our ducks come from there. And, you know, all the easements and lands that we've tried to protect in those regions for nesting habitat are critically important. And but equally important are the wintering grounds, you know, in Alabama, Mississippi, Gulf Coast, Louisiana, and Texas.
Yeah, think about it, just kind of the description of the where we're getting our ducks from. But it also helps me picture, you know, duck hunting that I think is so neat, the different ways you're doing it. Look, we talk about Canada, you know, there's somebody at a, you know, at a cut field in Canada hunting them, you know, dry fields, hunting geese and ducks. Same thing in the Dakotas versus somebody who's hunting them in a playa lake, you know, out west versus somebody hunting them in green timber. Us on the Gulf Coast here in a, you know, marsh surrounded with rozocaine and emergent vegetation to people hunting sea ducks in Mississippi Sound or, you know, off the coast. It's crazy the different ways that you duck hunt. I mean, it's all duck hunting, but it's...
It's amazing. And, you know, you hunt with folks in Michigan or Canada or Alaska, they're not worried about poisonous snakes or mosquitoes.
Right.
What about us boys down south, you know?
Yeah.
Yep. You know, we're not worried about, you know, in September having the field freeze so hard you can't get a stake in there to put up a full body shell. So,
exactly right.
Hey, let's talk about that too on the hunting side. And you're talking about your involvement with Ducks Unlimited, but what's your path into being a waterfowler? I mean, I think about Huntsville. I had friends up there when I was in college. It's that Tennessee River hunting. I got to go some. I thought it was really great. But how about you? Where'd you start duck hunting?
You know, I cut my teeth duck hunting on the Tennessee River between Decatur and Huntsville. There's some management areas there. And, you know, I'd show up with 5-6 decoys and try to partner up with some folks I didn't know.
Right.
See if they had room in their blind for me, you know. And I'm a real public land guy. I don't belong to a duck club, and there's some really nice ones throughout the country. But I love meeting people and just going and walking into a public land and taking advantage of that. And sometimes you get a good mess of ducks. Sometimes you don't.
You mean the chairman? Wait a second. The chairman
of
Ducks Unlimited. You're hunting public ground with it. You don't have – come on. Come on, Doug.
No, I do. I'm going to tell you a story about when I became president of Ducks Unlimited that first year. Now, I bought hunting licenses in 18 states last year.
And good for you.
I hunted 12 of them. So I did get to hunt some pretty nice places. But when I had a weekend at home, I went to a public area. I had 3 decoys, and I was going to walk in. And I met 2 guys that had a dozen decoys. And I asked them if they had room, and they said, sure. So we all went in there together, and we killed a few ducks. They never knew I was the president of Ducks Unlimited.
Yeah.
Not until I ran into them in a sporting goods store in Huntsville in the parking lot, and I had a DU president's jacket on, and I was walking into Cabela's, and they said, hey, didn't we hunt with you a few weeks ago? I said, yeah. And they said, well, where did you get that jacket? I said, well, I'm the president of Ducks Unlimited. had they been... suspicious characters wanted to do something illegal, I probably would have had to have left.
Right. Yeah.
But, but they didn't, and I had a truly good time. And guess what? They're going to come to the Huntsville dinner on October 29 this year.
That's awesome.
How about that?
That's probably, it's, you know, the undercover boss moment. If you could be out and you could be out there with regular Alabama hunters or whatever and hear their concerns, right? I mean,
the best way to understand the waterfowler is to hunt with them,
right?
And spend time with them. It's easy to understand properties that are highly managed that have staff and employees to do it. But I'm gonna tell you, the passion of the ACDNR on providing public areas for waterfowlers to hunt, they're applying biology and sound management practices to these public areas, and we need to take advantage of that as Alabama duck hunters, no doubt about it.
Absolutely. And the other part of this discussion, and we'll come back to hunting in a second, but I missed asking you about policy, because there's what you're doing with Ducks Unlimited, easements and buying properties, but the policy, right? I mean, is it this farm bill, the next farm bill, what's in there for whether we're talking about WRP or CRP or different EQIP programs? I mean, Ducks Unlimited, y'all are involved in that, right, from an advocacy side?
Huge. We have an office of about 10 people in D.C., and all we do is work on policy full-time with those people. We have a national committee that reports to the president, which is the Public Policy Committee, and we have state public policy chairmen who are volunteers in about 45 states. And policy's huge because... in the wisdom of a lot of our past national leaders, there have been various acts passed through Congress that reserve monies for conservation. So about 80% of the money we raise goes for match. These federal programs require us to match. Sometimes, like through a North American Wetlands Conservation Act, if we're going to do a project in the state of Alabama, say Wheeler Refuge or something, we'll apply for a NACA match, and sometimes NACA, North American Wetlands Conservation Act, match money will be we raise a dollar, they give us three.
Mm-hmm.
And then the state of Alabama may pitch in two more. So all of a sudden, that one donor dollar can become $4, $5, or $6.
That's big.
That's leverage.
Yeah, that is big.
That's leverage.
And it's a formula I want to remind folks, and we've talked about it at length on this show, but it, whether we're dealing with that or, you know, Pittman, that, like Doug just said, there's a match component, so you have to come up with a match, and also the importance of hunting licenses.
Yes.
I mean, explain to them, because I've said before, if we want that federal money, part of that formula is how many hunting licenses did you sell in Alabama?
Yeah. And so what happens is, for every hunting license and every firearm and every box of shells and a lot of camo clothing, people who participate in what we call consumptive sports, like hunting or fishing, pay a PR tax that's already built into the cost of goods, okay? And so the manufacturer pays that to the government, and it's reserved. The state has to provide match to get those PR dollars to be used in their state, okay? Well, the state only gets that match by selling enough hunting licenses, and those PR taxes support the state agency management. You know, some states don't get budget from the general fund.
Right.
They have to get budget through their PR money. And just recently, you know, just to give you one example, there's some legislation out there. About 35 legislators have introduced a bill to eliminate PR taxes.
I saw that.
It would devastate waterfowl and wetland and all conservation.
No, I saw that, and I was, you know, there on occasion there's pushes for, you know, expatriating federal lands sometimes, you know, take them out of reserve. And then those, you know, you have to work and fight against that. But then this thing to take away, when he says PR, Pittman-Robertson Act, this is, I mean, we can drive around our state and look at the public land in our state and some of the ones that have been added since, you know, Chuck Sykes been director. And y'all are looking at that money that Doug's talking about. And if this goes away, I don't know that they would they wouldn't have that kind of money out of the general fund to buy all the additional properties.
Exactly. It would cripple agency management and the great job that Chuck does. You know, luckily, it's only 35 members of Congress that have signed onto this, and a lot of them are trying to figure out ways to get their name off of it. And we don't think it's going to go anywhere, but in today's world, the very fact that someone would introduce legislation tells me and my policy team that we have a lot of work to do in educating policymakers.
Yeah, and you have to, you know, you're doing it here with us, and I know you're doing it around the country. You got to get the word out, because there's probably, like those guys that'll come to the Huntsville banquet and the guys you hunted with, if they're not checking in with Ducks Unlimited or, you know, a radio show like this one, they may not know that's even a thing. That could happen in Congress without them having any idea.
Exactly. So it becomes an important fact of our elevator speech to remind the average duck hunter that, you know, buying those licenses and shells and shotguns matter and enable us, you know, and the PR tax is a self-imposed tax.
Yep.
It was suggested by sportsmen years ago. And it pays for, you know, for wildlife conservation. And, you know, it's so important that we have that support vehicle, and yet it's also important that in an organization like Ducks Unlimited, we walk a very fine line when it comes to political parties.
Mm-hmm.
We walk on a razor thin knife, because we have to have support from both sides of the aisle, and luckily when it comes to conservation, we do, and that's really important as well.
It is, but I you know, the 35 members, right, and peeling away people off that's good. But not only educating, you know, or connecting the hunters and the Ducks Unlimited members with their local legislature or legislators in Washington, but you got to educate, like, I mean, I don't know how many waterfowlers there are in the Senate and the House. I have no idea. You may have a running total, Doug, but making sure they know what this is all about and why the heck it's important. Like, you and I get it, Mike gets it, but they may not.
That's true. We do a lot of work in educating them. In fact, we have a couple of fly-ins a year where we bring all of our state chairmen and our state policy people, and we go meet with our legislators. And we talk about the importance of public funding programs and the importance of waterfowl hunting. And we take a lot of these legislators duck hunting.
Okay, good.
Just to let them see the sunrise and the squirrels and the birds. And I think they appreciate that, you know. And They see Ducks Unlimited as a waterfowl hunter organization, as an important part to conservation as well.
It's good you take them hunting, because we were talking during one of the news breaks about the things we see hunting that a lot of folks don't see, and if they just could see it, right, Mike? If they could see it, they'd get it.
A lot of people have never done it. They've never been out in the woods, never seen the sunrise like we was talking about earlier, and see all the squirrels and the birds and the deer and the turkey and the ducks and everything else. They've never done it. Just like going out in the Gulf. When we go out there, we just think, man, it's just another day out here. But there's a lot of people who've never been out there. They've never seen the Gulf, never seen king, snapper, tuna, or whatever. Right. So it's a huge thing to take people that's never done it before.
Well, and one thing I tell people at a lot of banquets, you know, I'll hear people talk about other organizations.org, whether it's turkeys or deer or pheasants or quail or elk or whatever. And it's like, oh, that's their night. That's their night. Oh, they're a turkey member. Let me tell you, if you're a member of any .org that is supporting wildlife conservation, you're doing a good thing.
Yes.
And I tell our members all the time to support those other .orgs, because we're all trying to raise the tide so it raises the ship of conservation. That's what we're trying to do.
That's right. Most of us sportsmen are members of several organizations.
Right. That's why they have long bumpers, for you to have multiple stickers on your on your bumper for who you support.
That's right.
But I wonder, going forward, this is, I guess I'm now turned 50, so I can sound like old man mode. In my old man mode, what are we, the recruitment thing, and I'll say anecdotally, in the duck hunting world, at least in the South, it seems like our recruitment's been really great from the 1980s when I was an anomaly as a duck hunter to, you know, now in 2022, it seems to be way more popular. But recruiting those people to be members of Ducks Unlimited, to be people that are, buying equipment to fund Pittman, to buy those hunting licenses. Where are we with that? Does that, more kids are inside? I know, but more kids are detached.
You know, somebody took y'all hunting for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
You may remember who it is. Mm-hmm. But I think that we have to band together as sportsmen to do that for generations and even 35-year-olds who have never been hunting before. And
you're right.
Show them the experience. And it can start with the Ducks Unlimited banquet. And then, you know, there's also a flood of money coming now for green infrastructure. And guess what? Finally, our federal government has woken up to the fact that wetlands are green infrastructure. And finally, they're coming to us. We're excited about that, because the wetlands that we all love and cherish for duck hunting or raising ducks or whatever also act as nature's kidneys. They provide fresh drinking water. They provide flood abatement. They provide nutrient absorption. They provide carbon sequestration. So what that's doing is it's attracting a new type of member as well, not just a consumptive member, okay? It's somebody who may want fresh water for junior on the soccer field, you know? And so there's some other benefits of wetlands, and what's waking America up right now is there's a lot of corporate sustainability efforts and a corporate sustainability budgets that are looking for organizations like DU to support. And we're working with a lot of corporations right now in trying to raise dollars, and then we'd apply those for match dollars, do more conservation work. But the most important thing we can do today, right now, is Sean and Mike and Doug take some 12-year-old or 16-year-old duck hunt someday. That's the best thing we can do.
Well, it's good too, because I got to have somebody pick up decoys. So,
I love taking 16-year-olds because they have a lot more stamina than I do.
Correct.
That's right. They can pick them up.
Yeah, y'all haul that over there. Y'all pull this boat over there. But I think about you're talking about bringing the new people on board, and I'm always on board to have the most number of voices that are behind this. At the same time, you know, the history of consumptive outdoors folks, we put our money where our mouth is. Look at the funding of the DU vents over all these years, or whatever other group out there. It seems like that helps, you know, and maybe those other people will have that same thing. But my love for ducks over the decoys then brings me that love of the wetland, the carbon sequestration, the cleaner water, you know, those, that drives me, right? And I hope, even if I didn't love to hunt ducks like I do, I would be driven, but I'm not sure, Doug. You know, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I agree. And those, I call those the soft benefits because I'm a hardcore waterfowler. So the soft benefits of the other things are great, but they may appeal to somebody who's not a hardcore waterfowler.
Right. You know?
So the good thing about waterfowlers are they know that, you know, waterfowlers and hunters in general are the original conservationists.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that raising money for habitat will put more ducks over their decoys or more deer in front of their blind, you know, if they have the right habitat. It all starts with habitat.
Yeah, and I wonder if that, because I wonder if I stay in this narrow focus that I see more people interested in habitat and habitat management, whether it be in the uplands or the wetlands. But I wonder, does that exist outside my peer group or whatever? So you get a broader sense of that across the country.
You know, I think it does. I think what's happening is there's a broader awareness of environment. And I'll tell you what's changed, what's caused that. The words climate change, you know, that's kind of a buzzword now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we know that wetlands mitigate climate change. We don't know all about it, and we're not going to get out on a limb and start talking about it, okay? But it's brought awareness to a lot of people who are non-hunters, okay? So that when a hunting organization like Ducks Unlimited goes to someone who may not be a duck hunter, we have something a little more in common to talk about. And ultimately, that could result in getting them in a duck blind or understanding more about what we all love about hunting. And sometimes all those folks need is someone to talk to about it because they just hear one side in a lot of cases, you know?
Mm-hmm. Good point. I want to do this as we wrap up here to talk to folks. Give you the old chance to pitch them, Doug, on going to their DU banquet locally, how to get involved with Ducks Unlimited nationally. I mean, you've got the podium here, so let them know what they need to do.
Well, first of all, I just want to start by telling you what our mission statement is. Our mission: Ducks Unlimited conserves, restores, and manages wetlands and associated habitats for North America's waterfowl, and those habitats benefit other wildlife as well as people. And so what I want to do is encourage any listener to go to www.ducks.org, click on your state for local events, and they're listed on there, and go see where that event is. And, you know, you'll go to an event, there might be 20 people there, there may be 200 people there. You'll have some barbecue or something to eat, and you'll have an opportunity to buy some raffle tickets, maybe win a shotgun or some decoys. But most importantly, you're going to meet a lot of like-minded people. And that's about as grassroots America as I think we can be. And that is all pulling together for a common cause that raises awareness and does something for this great land that we are just here for a brief period of time. We need to make as big an impact as we can while we're here.
Well said. It sounds like that guy should be chairman of the board of Ducks Unlimited. Oh, wait,
he is. President.
Yeah, Doug Schoenrock, our guest. And big thank you for coming on. And hopefully we'll get you back on the show soon. And good luck, whether you're going teal hunting or during big duck season. I want some pictures.
Thank you. It's an honor to represent our friends from the state of Alabama.
Thank you, Doug.
I sincerely appreciate it, and I appreciate y'all's time today.
There he is.
Thank you.
Hey, what a treat. Doug Schoenrock, chairman of the board of Ducks Unlimited, and we're coming right back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have y'all along. Big thank you to Doug Schoenrock, new chairman of the board of Ducks Unlimited, Alabamian. So good stuff. Maybe if we can figure out if he's the chairman, he can send more ducks down, right? Because the chairman of Ducks Unlimited talks to the ducks and says, y'all.
You got to get in his hip pocket because I know he bought how many licenses last year? 18?
18.
Yeah. So I know he gets to go to a lot of good places, so you need to catch up with him and become really good friends with him and just get to go with him wherever he goes.
You know, and I would love to go with people, but at the same time, like I talked about this the other day with a friend of mine. It's like the joy of, like, I'd love, so if anybody wants to take me, I've been invited on some great hunts, and I enjoy that a lot.
Yeah.
But the doing it yourself, whether that's on public land or you know, work to, you know, put in some Japanese millet in a little flooded hole that floods up or something like that. The satisfaction, it's strange. I don't know.
I do
understand.
But
if I just walk to a blind, I've been on some great hunts, and thank you, the people who have taken me, and I would love to do it again. But yep. When you just walk into a pit, and you're there as a shooter, you didn't really, like, scout them or figure it out.
It's a lot like a charter boat.
It is.
You know, it's great
that's
to
actually
go on
what started
charter
that
boat.
That's what started the conversation.
You know, we go out on a charter boat. We just kick back, take it easy. It's ding, ding, ding. You go out there, drop line down, catch fish.
Right.
And then ding, 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 we go to another spot. You know, it's just you don't have anything in the game. You know, you just catch fish, and that's it.
Right.
I like getting everything ready, making my lines all, you know, for the last week I've been making beeliner rigs.
Yes.
You know, with about 6 hooks on them. So I've been doing that all week. You know, just preparing and getting things ready. I mean, that's the big part of it, just like you're talking about. It don't matter whether you're deer hunting, turkey hunting,
yep.
Bass fishing, guff fishing. It don't make any difference. The fun part of it is getting things ready to go and preparing and getting your fields ready,
yeah.
Or whatever it is.
I mean,
know?
It's work, and it's like I wouldn't do the same amount of work if I wasn't going to go do the thing,
yeah.
Right? Whether it be catching beeliners or shooting a deer.
Yeah.
But those two things are made better because you tied lines, you figured out where you wanted to go, or you put the stand in that bottom where you knew it would be the right spot, and you
right. Limbed
trees and...
You got that green field. You didn't know that it was going whether it's going to work or not.
Right.
And boy, it comes up, and you're so proud. It looks so good. Maybe ends up being the best green fields you've ever had, or whatever. You know, just
yep.
the work out of it. You know,
so it's a weird thing. Yeah, it's like, but it you is. Get you. Well, we get each other. We're about coming yeah. from the same cloth on that.
But a lot of people don't understand it.
Right? Why
they
you
don't?
But once again, I've had fun when the few times I've gotten invited to these great places to go duck hunting because I love to just see the show.
Yeah.
But like you. It's more fun, and going with people who have, like, leases, where I've gone in the past. I used to have leases when I was young in the Mississippi Delta over there. But to go with somebody, when you're because, you know, you're scouting, and, hey, let's ride and look at this field. Let's look at this other field. Now we need to shoot this one tomorrow. The ducks are on this other side. Well, that's not where the pit is. How are we going to do it? Well, we can get these layout things yeah. and drag stuff all over us and hide. And it's, you know, that's all – it's fun.
It is. It's part of it.
Figuring them out and, you know, trying to – yeah, so – it is it's good stuff. But, yes, if you have a fantastic green timber mallard shoot you want to take me on, I'm here. I'll go with you. I'll go with you anytime. Anytime. Okay, a couple things here. You mentioned beeliners. You had a good beeliner trip.
Did. Mm-hmm. Sure did. Week before last went out.
Okay.
Now, I didn't have a good snapper trip, you know, but caught a limit of beeliners, some real nice beeliners. Yeah.
The difference is, too, on how you rig for beeliners. You're talking about your beeliner rigs.
Right.
What are you running for beeliner rigs? Multi-hook? You doing a chicken rig? What are you doing?
I do usually six, sometimes seven rigs. Now, you know, they make these little things like you're going to deep drop. The,
mm-hmm.
the swivel with yep. the crimp on both sides of it. So you put it on like 200-pound monofilament, and you crimp it, and then you got the swivel, and you put
right.
your hook out on it. And I've got a ton of that stuff. So I make it, and I use tuna circle hooks.
But smaller.
Tuna circle hooks, yeah. yeah. Real. I would say they're 3-aught or they're 4-aught, but every manufacturer, if you say a 3-aught in one, it's a 5-aught in another or something.
Which, so by the way, as a man
all,
that spent
they're all different.
As a man that spent all that time in the sporting goods business, did you ever call those people and say, what the heck? Can we get some standardization on hooks? Because people, I'll say, like, they'll say, oh, Sean, I like the treble hooks you use. I use a little smaller treble hooks than a lot of people. Trout
yeah.
fish, not small, but.
Yeah.
And I'll say, well, that's an 8X or that's a 10X. And they'll call me from the store, well, this one looks bigger. Well, I'm like, it's another manufacturer.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I can look at them and tell you what you need.
That's
you know?
Right. I mean, and I don't understand that with hooks. They ought to be more standardized than what they are. But,
yeah.
But they're, especially in tuna circle. Tuna circle is really about the worst I've seen. They're just not
it doesn't mean
standardized.
It, right.
They're just not. But anyway, it's a small. Tuna circle hook that I
okay.
use with that.
So it's coming off the main line out to that
right
circle
and,
hook.
And I'll tell you something I did, too, the other day, Sean, that I thought was pretty interesting. You know, I bought some fish bites. Me and Jason Smith went fishing one time, and And he
fish bites, like the stuff I use for brim or white perch or something?
Well, fish bites are these. Well, you can use it for bass. Or you can use it for.
Yeah, these are the things I'm thinking
whatever.
About.
Whatever.
Yeah,
they're little. Well, yeah, they come in strips, or you can come buy some that are about an inch and a half long.
Right.
Anyway,
but it's the same material they make for the little crappie bites, they call them,
right.
and all that kind of stuff.
And it's got like a web in there, so it holds together a little bit better.
Okay, I'm interested. You got my attention.
Yeah, so, I bought them, and I said, I want to try that next time we go out and do some beeline fishing. And, of course, we was using squid, and I said, Dad, I got those fish bites. I want to try the fish bites.
Okay.
So then the next person that brought their line up, I said, nothing but fish bites. We're putting that on there, and we're dropping it down. Didn't make any difference. It's just as good as squid dropping it down. The fish bites work fine.
What's nice about, and I don't know how those are packaged, but things like that, you could keep for, you don't have to freeze them. You just got them and you could have them in the boat and you don't.
At any time, you say, I didn't bring any squid today. Well, you got fish bites. You keep them on your boat all the time and you always got some bait that you can use for beeline fishing.
Okay, I'm going to stop by the store on the way out of here. Coming right back to wrap it up on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. What kind of big pack? Did you get a big pack?
Big pack? Yeah. They're not real big, but they just come one size as far as I know.
Okay. All right. Yeah. We'll go to the break and discuss. All right, so we've done it again. We went long, so short right here at the end, but just sets us up for next week. Remember, hunt license renewing?
Yep.
That's happening for everybody right now.
I renewed the ones I needed to.
Yeah.
I mean, you have lifetime license.
Right, but I got to renew my WMA permits.
Yep.
I got to renew my, you're going to bird hunt, you got to do your HIP.
I did that.
Also, for me, before September 10th gets here, I got to have a federal duck stamp and a state duck stamp. You know, HIP for dove hunting, you got to have, but in addition, I have to have stamps. But like my WMA permit for the state, I had to renew. And
my reef permit,
and baiting license, all that stuff renewed.
Yeah, baiting license. Yeah, I did baiting license and HIP and the reef permit.
Yeah, so for most folks, if you've done that stuff online, you'll probably have an email. You dig through your inbox from, the state.
Yeah.
Go through to Outdoor Alabama. So, yeah, even like Mike and I both with lifetime licenses for hunting and fishing, there's still stuff that we have to renew each year. So this is the time. And they're opening, I hate to say this because I always feel like I'm shooting myself in the foot, but those great special opportunity area hunts in the state, they're starting in September, you're starting to be able to apply for those and get in. I didn't just say that. There's no SOA hunts.
I can't believe you said that.
Yeah, it's just a shame. All right, we're out of here. Be back with you next week for another edition of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. So fish bites.
Fish bites.
All right, I'm going to get those.